on 1116 SEN. The Whiteboard with Robert Shaw and David Armitage.
Geary's under the pump, gets a hurried kick back towards Armitage, and he takes the mark. Now the Saints are off. Tucks it under his arm. Two bounces. Tries to draw the player in Murphy. Goes over the top to Montagna. Joey goes back again to Armitage. Wants to get onto that left boot. Eventually decides on the hand pass. Across to Billings. Little chip is good. Billings to Armitage. He's kicked the goal.
Talking about contest, look at Armitage, 42 on the game already.
A little too swift for Bontempelli. He goes to ground. Turnover occurs. Armitage has got it. 43. Goes onto the left boot. Kick is a beauty. Centre wing area. They've got the numbers here. Armitage yet again has mocked up getting it.
Just like in American football, they can count down the clock now. Saints, that was brilliant.
We'll stay for a shot and the song, of course. The Saints have got up off the canvas and have scored an unlikely but heroic win.
Oh, I now know I've got hairs on the back of my neck because they're standing up. Arno, what was it like hearing that? So, by the way, just a little thank you to Fox Football for that audio. Dermot Brereton, key part, but gee, isn't Sandy Roberts still a great caller? You can tell you what, you can bring up the new faces and new names in calling and many
new,
of them.
And the new themes they call with,
yep.
But you can't beat class. An original.
Yeah.
Class.
Class. Sandy Roberts, you little beauty. And Arno, that was something else. There's so many thoughts that go through a fan's mind when the team is down by 8 goals at halftime, having just been on the receiving end of one of the most brilliant quarters of football. Doesn't matter where the Doggies and the Saints are on the ladder. What the Doggies did in that second quarter, and I'm sure it'll be recreated over the next few years and maybe for longer, was something special. So what was your thought? And it was a pretty emotional halftime. Clay Smith has just gone down. There was a little bit of a to-do between, I think it might have been Stringer and Nick Riewoldt. What was the feeling? 48 points down in a game after the Essendon loss that I'm sure St Kilda were setting themselves for. How did it feel walking down the race 48 down?
First of all, thanks for having me back.
Oh, thanks for coming back.
Nah, it's great to be
part
here.
Of the rotation. Don't get carried away.
Oh, sorry. Thank you, Rory. also listening to that brings back goosebumps. But, yeah, like you said, we were down 48 points and half-time, Richo didn't really say much, to be honest. Sort of left it up to us. Just had a thing on the whiteboard saying, what are you going to do individually to get us back? And that was basically it. It was a bit of a shock. We were all sort of looking around at each other going, that's it, okay. But we knew what we had to do. We did it the week before for 4 quarters. So don't get me wrong, Bulldogs were very good in that second quarter. Their pressure was unbelievable. And we couldn't handle the heat, as the term is called these days. But we basically got back to what we know works, and that's putting pressure on them when they had the footy, and that's what turned it around. Then came our ball use off that in the second half.
Yes, David, but didn't they kick the first one or two after half time? Finey's got a theme for us later on, but these are some of the questions I was really keen on, and you've answered one about Richo's reaction. I didn't expect very rarely in those sort of situations will you get an emotional coach, because emotional is finished, right? So that was interesting. What was the reaction on the field after they did kick the first goal? You know, because that to me was the real difficult part for you.
Yeah. Obviously, it deflates you straight away. That's the first thing, thinking, But we've done a lot of work in this space over the course of 6 weeks in regards to momentum changes. And, I mean, we've got off to really good starts.
You have?
A lot of teams, even Collingwood that game.
Yeah, I saw that.
And then it, being, a young team, guys dealing with momentum swings was obviously an issue for us. So we addressed that, and obviously we're on the receiving end of a good start from the Bulldogs, and we just had to get back to what it comes down to, which is the fundamentals of football, which is winning the ball more than they do, and then spreading from stoppage, and when they have the ball, getting the ball back off and applying massive pressure. So
I can understand that. It's great. That I'm going to ask you some questions. I don't mind if you played the party line, but I'm obligated to ask you, how did, you know, you've had 45 possessions, you've been very instrumental. Did the Bulldogs run a number of players off you, or did you go to a player, or was there a specific player targeted for you, or basically head-to-head? So there's four different versions of midfield play there. Which one did they sort of attack you with?
It was basically had a man at the stoppage.
Yeah.
It wasn't one where...
Don't have to name
man.
Him.
No, at all. It was a series of guys, and
right.
I'd line up next to them on a stoppage, and then I'd just spread either if they won the ball and kicked it inside their forward line, I'd run back to help the defenders.
And then spread
and
out.
And vice versa. If we won it, I'd run forward. So it was, a number of players, but I kind of just ran around and was lucky enough to get a few positions.
It might not yet read Polly Farmer and Billy Goggin, but there seems to be something going on with yourself and Billy Longer, that Billy Longer's, even in the 6 weeks of this season, developed to be a very good tap ruckman, and there seems to be this innate understanding between yourself and Billy. Is that worked on specifically between the you two, or do you read and are finding it easier to read as the ball is in the air whether or not Billy's going to have one of those commanding hitouts, because many of them have gone down your throat, and you also seem to be able to hit them in stride, which is very important.
Yeah, Billy's been really good this year for us. His tap work, you know, he at the end of the game, normally he's positive in hitouts, so but doesn't always relate to us winning clearances. But I have worked really closely with Billy, and obviously know how it comes off his hand. Sometimes we have calls out there as well. We have little signals that we do. And I'm really hard on Billy, and vice versa. If I'm not there, he'll tell me, he'll let me know. So Billy and I have got this relationship going where, we are really hard on each other, and he expects me to be there if he wins a tap, and I expect him to win the tap. So we've got a really good relationship going at the moment.
And how about the other big guy, Tom Hickey?
Tommy boy.
Tom Hickey has to reinvent himself a bit. Would have thought probably he, if not first ruckman, would have had a lot of ruck duty. So he's going to, over the last 2 weeks, have to play forward and has done really well. He obviously doesn't take any time on shaving or his hair because he's starting to look very scary. I think they might have put Robert Murphy off when he was kicking the ball in. Hickey's hair's everywhere. His sort of beard grows during the game. And for him to run down Robert Murphy, now that was a pivotal moment in the game because Murphy has been brilliant this season and elusive and outstanding with the ball. So I reckon if Tom Hickey had it in his mind that he could bring him undone, there's not a player out there that wouldn't have got a lift from that.
No, not at all. And it's actually really exciting if those two are up and about and we can have them in the same team and one can go forward and take a mark and kick a couple of goals each week, it's only going to be good for us and the team. So... And that's basically what Hick did on the weekend. He'd been out of the team for a little bit for reasons. So I think it was round one. He didn't have the best game. Found himself out of the team, got some form back, and then he's come back in and really grasped the opportunity. So, and he was terrific on the weekend. Like you said, he took a few marks, but also the defensive stuff is what we expect from whoever plays in the forward line down there. And we basically their role, first and foremost, is to... put pressure on the opposition and don't let it out easy.
What difference does it make to any club having a list either nearly all available or at least the guys that are off injured closing in on returning to the field? Because it's a rare occasion over the last... Well, even in your time at St Kilda, to have so many available. Does it make training more fun? Does it make the whole environment more enjoyable, knowing that just about everybody there is going to be playing footy on the weekend or close to?
Yeah, it does, and it only boosts the team because you go back down and through the VFL and that makes that team really strong, and it only puts spots and positions up for grabs, and it makes it really, really strong. And those years we did really well in 2009 and 2010, that's what we had. We had a lot of guys in the VFL pushing up for spots, and if you didn't perform and play your role at the AFL, then you were soon found out and you're back down to the VFL, and some would just come in and play their role and take your spot. So once you can get that that happening, and you know we're not far off, we've got Semi Gilbert coming back, we've got these blokes coming back performing really strongly at VFL, it's only going to make the seniors perform better. So well, I think we had 44 on the track the other day, which is pretty rare for a team. You know, there's always some injuries and teams are underdone, but yeah, it's really good, and we're in a pretty healthy spot at the moment.
Okay, following on from that, and given the rapid development of your list, and can you detect Alan Richardson's final meeting? Is it now totally about this is how we will and can win the game, or are you detecting still a development of a positional development with Aloney, Jack Billings? I want you to develop your wing play more. Where's the balance now you find with St Kilda, with your teammates?
Well, yeah, saying that, Shuri, start of the year was probably more so the development, and
you could tell that in addresses.
Yeah, definitely. But now that we've shown that we can.
Yeah, it's good.
We can do this, especially the Essendon game. So we've shown we can do it for four quarters. No matter how old you are, how experienced you are, we expect every person, whether you're Rui or you're Jack Loney, you know, one of those guys, we expect, if you're out there, we expect physically you're up for it, so you can run up and down the field for 120 minutes, and mentally you're up for it. So
I find that really interesting, Mark, that how quickly a club, any club, can go from... Yeah, we might be giving you games and you're learning positional play and we're prepared to wear that to a position in 6 weeks where they go to Adelaide and most of their planning is about...
Winning the game.
We can, and they can, they've got to do a hell of a lot right, but they can go and pinch the game in Adelaide. It's very, very interesting, the development of football teams.
Well, I'll ask you this, Shuri. Did Port Adelaide instill that notion of...
The turnaround
can come in a month. Port Adelaide, and we just have to go back and sort of remember it. We're reliving it a little bit with the Bulldogs, and had the Saints not come back on the weekend, the Bulldogs would have been 5-1, taking all before them with plenty of winnable games for the remainder of the season. Now, they still have that scenario, but just a little bit of a reality check for the Doggies. But I just remember, as Port Adelaide, remember the year before, Port Adelaide were rudderless. Should Corns be there? The coach obviously had been replaced. Is Hinkley the right man to take us forward?
Cardboard faces to look like the crowd.
Correct. People not turning up. Hand out to the AFL. Within each week, you'd say, "See, that was a good win." Oh, hang on.
You need a bit of luck.
They
don't forget Robbie Gray missed a lot of footy. Blokes like Robbie Gray, and then you find someone lets Ollie Wines slip through. You know,
well, that's
and
right.
All of a sudden you got to get a little bit of luck too.
And guys like Homsch went from, can't pronounce his name.
Name to a...
Don't worry, you won't have to. We won't be playing in 2 weeks to, I better learn his name. He's pretty good.
Yeah.
And these are now accepted serious footballers. Is that the feeling that is happening at St Kilda? And do you believe, Armo, that it can happen in a short period of time? And it's not really, it's... This overnight success takes a lot more. There's been a couple of years of putting the building blocks in place, but there comes a time when a team, where you start to feel, hang on, I can almost see the 22 that will take the field next time my side is playing in a final.
Don't answer yet, because I'm going to jump in, because you're absolutely right. He mightn't be able to answer it, but I tell you what, there's a phase where he's sitting there, as you did, and said, might be a while before we see finals. You know, you're sitting there talking with me all year saying, I'm prepared to go to the draft again and keep going. Has your mindset changed? And has your mindset changed in such a short time?
Mate?
Yeah.
As a player?
You must have gone through a phase where you're going, this is going to get bloody hard.
Yeah, it was...
You know?
Yeah. Possibly last year.
Right.
It would have been. Last year... Because, I mean, we were insipid in first quarters last year, and we basically lost the game in the first quarter, and then, you know, we got a little bit of credibility back where we'd win two quarters, and the game was over at quarter time or halfway through the first quarter. So this year, definitely more so. The pre-season that we had, the times that we were running in our 2K time trial, blokes, we had 16 PBs or something like that.
So it was as early as that. That's really interesting. As early as that in the pre-season.
Actually, this is great. Clubs run that out, you know, as part of their marketing and membership strategy. We've had 16 blokes. You actually believe that that is significant internally in the group?
Yeah, of course. Yes. Yeah, definitely.
That's interesting.
I mean, blokes, Sean Dempster.
We only see it as the marketing strategy.
Yeah, no. Definitely gives you belief, 100%. And even the training. The training camps you go away on as a group, and you bond for 10 days, and it's
going down the rapids. Where were you in the rapids in Queensland, Queenstown?
Queenstown, and there's mountains that you're running up, and you're busting your nut for each other, and you get to the end of the session, and you know it's that hard, but you're sort of in arms, and you just get that connection, and you know it's hard to explain to people, but it is a great feeling. You get your belief from that, and I suppose it's something that Port Adelaide did.
And quickly.
Quickly. And you know, we're on a sort of similar path to that in regards to pre-seasons and how fit we're sort of getting. But, once you train all through all that and they add a little bit more to the game plan, layers and stuff like that, then you can see it when you actually start playing in games, and that's, you keep building and getting that belief. And that's certainly this year, the way that we've come out, not saying we're going to win X amount of games and whatnot, but it's the way we've played this year. You know, we've come out in first quarters and we've blitzed teams. And then it's just, playing that four quarters like I keep coming back to. So
that would have been good fun. Imagine if you and I were playing for St Kilda and we go to Queenstown with the rivers of New Zealand, Richard would be coming out, ticking off the roll. Fine. Sure. No answer. We'd be down some creek somewhere, mate, fishing for those. Did you go any fishing?
No fishing.
Oh.
There is a danger period, and sorry, as both a senior AFL coach and certainly as part of the coaching panel, there must be a danger period in that time of when the rebuild is at its rawest and the young players are being played and the games are being lost at quarter time, there is a danger that some of those senior guys, especially the guys around 24 and 25 that would be desirable on other lists, need to be really convinced that the future is at that club. So I think with yourself, David, it wasn't as much of an issue this year, but anecdotally, and as you followed the newspapers, Jack Stephen was not an immediate re-signing. In the end, he's committed long-term to the club. Is that the sort of player, and you don't need to speak on his behalf, you can even say on your behalf, especially given that you're in the prime of your career, this is exactly where clubs want their players to be. And if they can pick up one from a club that is struggling a little bit and is starting to question whether or not my next 3 or 4 years are going to be spent at the bottom, in the bottom third of the ladder, babysitting first-year footballers, is that a dangerous time for a club to retain those important prime of their career footballers?
Oh, for me that's hard to say, because just in with our club, knowing Amit Baines and Tony Elshaw have done a terrific job in recruiting, and you just see, you know, who we pick up at the end of the year, and you watch the highlights of these kids, and then you go, you know, geez, they've done a really good job here.
How important is the coach? How important was Alan Richardson to that equation, having confidence that the future was rosy?
Oh, hugely important. And he'd had, massive raps on him, and he'd been at a lot of clubs, and he was such an experienced guy, and to see the turnaround that happened at Port Adelaide and he was involved.
Yeah, that's very important, yes.
So then you sort of see that, and then he comes in and instills, you know, what it took for them, which was bloody hard work, and then he sits you down and says, you know, he believes in the group, and then individually he says, I believe in you. If you do X, Y, Z, I believe you can be this, and certainly he did that to me, and also Jack Stephen, and Then you see the recruitment of who we get, you know, Billings, and we re-sign 17 young guys, and which is terrific for the club. They commit, and then you see it, and then you just, you know, you have the plan that the board and all these guys, the vision that they see, and about, you know, 2020, obviously we want to do it quicker than that, but you see all that kind of stuff, and it really gets you excited, and, you know, why wouldn't you want to re-sign, I suppose?
Yeah, Dave's had a really impressive start to the year. Obviously, one of our champions, Lenny Hayes, has moved on, and I reckon that's been a bit of a... he's sensed the opportunity to be the man, and he's grabbed it. He had the opportunity to lead the team against the Maggies. Whilst we didn't have a great day, it was a game where the broadcaster had the audio on. We had the benefit of being able to listen to the way he led, and he was really impressive. He's matured as a footballer. He's certainly matured as a young man. He's a real pro now, and he's reaping the rewards. He lost a significant amount of weight. He's not only able to win the ball on the inside, he's given us some good run on the outside.
Oh, there's a few points out of that with Alan Richardson speaking about David Armitage. You were wired for that game against Collingwood. Were there any temptations just to yell out some Cheerios, or how's your dog going? Maybe you could have told your girlfriend, come on, boys, come on, let's get around and kick a goal. And also, by the way, if you haven't fed, what's the dog's name?
Ari.
That's the second name of the dog, by the way.
It was Roxy.
If you haven't fed Roxy, no, now it's Ari. Go and feed Ari, will you? Because we're all listening to it. Were you conscious of the fact that you wired up?
I was, but then I totally forgot about it. And, I mean, they couldn't show... Yeah, there was a lot of F-bombs and they couldn't show some things. But there was one funny one where there's a call... I don't really want to give it away, but there's a call called Party, and Swanee yelled out, "Yes, please." And I was hoping that didn't get picked up on the mic. He's a character, Swanee.
Oh, he's a beauty.
He's a great one.
Yeah, I've had good fortune to be involved with Swanee with a couple of functions raising money for the Butterfront Foundation, and I don't think this is out of school because everybody knows it's Swanee. He's almost the reluctant champion, isn't he? I mean, the impression he gives to people is that he'd rather not be playing footy. But when push comes to shove, he loves it and he's brilliant at it.
Oh, he's a competitor.
Yeah.
And he acts all calm and cool. And
yeah.
But at the end of the day, he's out there to win football games, and that's what he does very well.
Because I was interviewing him up on stage, and the Asada business was right, you know, in everybody's... Everybody was talking about it. It must have been one of the million things that made headlines. And I said to him, how would you feel if you were at a club and you were faced with the prospect of being put on the sideline for 2 years? He said, with pay? I said, yes. He goes, so you're offering me 2 years, full pay, no footy? He's just smiling and he goes, that's a club. Now, there's a club I'd like to play for. But I don't think that's really true. David Armitage is in the studio with Robert Shaw. Just a couple of things on Alan Richardson. Did you see him standing just with his arms folded as St Kilda had won the game and you guys were coming off the ground? It was well written today, I think, by Mark Robinson in the paper. He looked like a proud father at an under-14s game. There must have been a great sense of pride for your performance, for Riewoldt, for the senior players, but also for Jack Sinclair, for young McKenzie, for these young boys to have been, Jack Billings, so pivotal in the win, there was a sense of a very proud, if not father, then father figure.
Yeah, I didn't see him straight away, but certainly after the game, he echoed those words, proud. He would have said it about three or four times. He said, you know, I'm really proud of you, obviously not happy with the first half, but the way you came back, I mean, it's history. It's, what, the third biggest win in the history of VFL AFL. So,
and St Kilda's equal biggest ever, if not biggest ever comeback, 55 points. It's, geez, you're not going to play many of them, David.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly right. And so that's I guess he was proud of our character and proud of the young guys, you know, that they did something about it for the footy club.
Were you ever involved in a big comeback? Well, certainly you were as a coach because you were there with Essendon and North Melbourne.
I'm just telling him he's just scratching the surface.
69 points.
I think it got to 72 halfway through the second quarter against North Melbourne. Carey, Archer, Stevens, McMartin.
Okay.
And we got him.
Oh, well done.
At the MCG. It's something 27 goals to 25 or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
But when you consider it, because it was such a high-scoring era...
Yes.
Remember, this game was not decided by teams that scored even 100 points. So to be 55 down and only two goals on the board, gee, it's a long, long way back. Anyhow, we'll put that to one side because the whiteboard tonight is going to have a look at what life was like for David Armitage when he got read out by St Kilda. Now, were you at the draft? Were you sitting there? And were you expecting to go to St Kilda or were there other suitors?
No, well, I actually, first of all the managers are after you before, you know, you get drafted. So you end up choosing a manager and obviously I'm with ESP and they've been terrific for me, Shane Casley. And yeah, I suppose they obviously get spoken to by recruiters and agencies and things like that. So it went from, you know, you're a possibility to get drafted into... You know, yep, you might go in the second or third round into, and then, you know, I kept playing consistent footy and it kept dropping and dropping. And then all of a sudden I was invited down with my parents to Melbourne from Queensland to go to attend the draft. And, they thought I was a possibility to go in the first round, if not probably second round. And then I got a call. It was actually Alan Richardson was working for Collingwood and it was at the draft camp and they had sort of, said that they were pretty keen and, you know, they had picks 8 and 10 in the draft and, you know, they're pretty low, so I wasn't too sure what was going to happen, but I hadn't even spoken to St Kilda, to be honest. And then all of a sudden I heard on the night, you know, pick 8 got read out. I think it was Ben Reid, and then pick 9 and St Kilda, and I just didn't expect anything. And then all of a sudden my name got read out and I was... just flabbergasted. I was over the moon. I couldn't believe it.
Did you want to come to Melbourne? Now, you'd already moved away from home, hadn't you?
Yeah. I moved away from mum and dad when I was 16, from Mackay, North Queensland, down to Brisbane to live with the Urquhart family, who Gavin was at the Kangaroos. So I lived with them for a year and then...
Who's dad, Jim?
Yeah,
I played in the 1973 grand final under-19s with. There you go. Keep
Tassie.
Going. Yeah. No, Essendon versus my first year, 17-year-old.
Jimmy Urquhart.
Yep. Jimmy Urquhart, there you are. He's Jimmy's, still all right?
Yeah, Jimmy, yeah.
Good. Yep. There you go. Sorry, Finny.
No, that's... I knew we'd find something so connected. You've been involved with many.
No, he's a legend, Jimmy. And then the year after that, I stayed with Jack Barry, who was at Morningside. He was a manager at Morningside. So that a year there and a year there. And then all of a sudden, yeah, started playing some really good footy in the seniors at Morningside in 2006. My name got read out.
Now you,
number 9.
So, St Kilda name you. Who's the first person that comes to you? Do you know what happens next? Do you think, right, am I moving to Melbourne tomorrow? Where am I going to live? Should I have my bags packed? How does it work? Are you on the witness protection program? Quickly, David. Are your bags packed? We have to leave now. It's...
Nah.
Last play leaves now. Come to Melbourne.
Nah, it is. So Ross Lyon and the recruiters come over. You meet them, obviously shake their hand. You're pretty pumped. And they obviously know everything about you already, things that you wouldn't even know they know about you. They do their research. So they gave me a week to come down. So I went back up and with all the Morningside boys had a celebration with them in Brisbane there, had a few frothies and then... yeah, they gave me a week to get back down and get into pre-season straight away.
Where were you put up with another player, with a family? Are you given somewhere to live or are you given your own accommodation?
No, in the first year, the clubs, I probably can speak on a lot of clubs, give you a host family. So make sure you're properly fed and you're going to bed on time and all that kind of thing. And you're not out. So that's something that they certainly do, all the clubs. And I was lucky enough to get a place in Brighton Beach with people, Chris and Leone Schween, who I'm still to this day very close with, and they've helped me out and done a terrific job. So I'd like to thank them on here, I suppose. But
it's almost like foster parenting.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, they're basically my second mum and dad in Melbourne. So and they're really close with my mum and dad also from Queensland. When they come down, they stay with them. So it's a good relationship.
Robert, you are signed by Essendon. You come over, talented young sports person, and you're also put in a house, aren't you?
No, no, I was in year 11, right?
In Tasmania.
And in Tasmania.
Yes, yes.
And the loudspeaker goes off. Robert Shaw, 11C, please report to the headmaster's office. And I've gone, oh, they got me for bashing that bloke or jobbing that bloke. He's found me out for belting the bloke in the playground over the footy. I'm in trouble. So I've sauntered up to the headmaster's office. This is how I get signed.
Yeah.
Robert, could you come in, please? Oh, going on, no. And do you know these two gentlemen? I said, no. So I'd like you to introduce you to the captain coach of the Essendon Football Club, Des Tudnham, and the vice president of the Essendon Football Club, Mr. Jim Matthews. They'd like to have a word with you. Robert, we'd like you to come and play for Essendon. We've spoken to Mum, right?
She says it's okay.
She says it's okay to leave at year 11. And when you finish... I was in a cricket carnival, an under-19 cricket carnival, which was, I think, in Adelaide or Sydney. And they said, pack your bags. And on the way back from the cricket carnival, come to Tullamarine and you'll stay. So I can't remember how I got from Tullamarine to Essendon, but they put me in the Essendon Motor Inn, a famous establishment in the Mount Alexander Road at Essendon.
You're 17 years old.
So I stayed there. I was in there, and I said, what do I do now? They said, well, come wander up to, it's 100 metres over the railway line. Wander up to the club tomorrow when you wake up and have a bit of brekkie and come up and introduce yourself to people. So that was it, Mark.
How long did you stay at the motor inn?
A couple of nights, and then I got organised, very similar to David, got put in with the family in Essendon,
yep.
Who knew my mum and dad from Tassie and stayed there for a number of years before I branched out and...
And do you do tours there? Do you, I mean...
No, I had a bungalow. I had a bungalow at the back. I could come and go as I pleased. I obviously, eventually got my licence when I was old enough. And
obviously, Essendon cover your board, but do you feel obligated...
Yeah, that was $25 a week.
Do you feel obligated... For the family? Do you feel obligated to help with the dishes? To
oh, you did all that sort of stuff, yeah.
And so with you,
yeah, and
you
I didn't have my licence.
You want to help him out?
Yeah, so I used to go down to the corner and catch the bus from Woolley Street. Essendon people will know exactly where I'm talking about, the corner of McCracken Street and Woolley Street. Caught the bus there up to training.
And did either of your...
That was it.
Did either of your host families... I mean, you're both obviously conscientious footballers. Just have to ever remind you... Was there a curfew? I mean, were you told, you know, you've got to be back home by 11 o'clock and not do the wrong thing?
Nah, my bloke was worse than me. He got home later than I did.
You had to tell him?
Yeah.
How about with you? And then of course, you moved in with Terry Denneher.
Yeah, no, I moved around a bit. I when I got my licence, I started to branch out a bit.
Yeah.
Right, which wasn't great for my footy.
But you
so know. I
so your social life improved.
So social life improved. Footy went backwards at 18, which it tends to do, and I was of no fixed address.
Couch surfing.
I got called into the club. Come on, settle down a bit, and they dropped me from the seconds to the under-19s, and that's the year I played in the grand final with Jimmy Urquhart.
Yeah.
And then got it on track a little bit later. But I was hauled over the coals by the club.
You sound like those Amish that are on those programs when they run they wild. Well, they've been so restricted. Sounds like you're running a mark.
We all came in together. Ronnie Andrews, Gary Fold, Simon Madden.
Was Van der Haar around?
No, he came 76, 77.
Okay.
Now, a couple of years younger.
Armo.
Back to Armo.
Did you end up moving out of your host family's house in with another footballer?
Yeah, I live with... I moved out with Jaron Geary and Sean Dempster.
Yep.
Shawnee, obviously, was a real professional from Sydney. Came down and basically moved in with him and then...
Do you make that choice? Or does the club suggest...
That was Rossi Lyon.
Yeah.
Yeah, he basically said, you're living with... Shinner, Sean Dempster.
Interesting.
Scar up, no worries.
So that was to learn preparation and food?
Yeah, and how to cook.
That sort of stuff.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff, basically, because in your host family, they cook for you, basically.
So some life skills.
Yeah, basically life skills. So that was really helpful. Ended up living with them for 3 years and and then moved out with, I think it was Raph Clark after that, and then, yeah, out on my own after that.
Now, I had life skills, learning.
Yes.
Yeah.
How to make sure we didn't get caught at the Essendon Hotel on Thursday night. how to get out before a committeeman had fined us. That's real life skills, isn't life it, mate?
If you want to hear the best life skills stories, the Caulfield Football Club, who were in the VFA, notoriously used to go out drinking as a team, and Tony Jewell would chase them from pub to pub around Caulfield, London Tavern, up to Nickabella's. And at each pub, the publican had either a bell or a little sound that meant that Tony Jewell was walking in the front, and there was always an escape out the back. And apparently walked into London Tavern one day, and before the publican could get to the bell, he said, "Don't touch that bell." he knew what the sound was. He snuck out the back and caught
it. Times have changed, David.
Definitely.
Welcome back. The Whiteboard with David Armitage. Robert Shaw for those New York Minute burgers.
He hasn't been much help, has he?
Just told us everything.
We've been 2 days trying to work out who was on Jack Billings, and we thought, he's not sure.
Well, that's the modern game.
Just
on that, Armo, as the whole midfield and everybody peels back, I guess it's less about standing somebody when the ball is bounced. It's more important of picking up somebody when the ball's there in motion.
Yeah, that's right. And, you hear a lot with the commentators and things like that these days about team defences and coming off and helping. So you might line up on someone, but then all of a sudden you have to come forward and take someone else that's popped out of the midfield, and therefore the other defender, who's a fullback, maybe like a Luke Delaney, then has to come off, and he might find himself on a small. So it's just how team defences are working these days.
But do you still get the old-fashioned now, David? Scotty Thompson this week, right? He gets on top of you, and they want you to stun him. He's at 8. Time to tighten up a bit.
Yeah, there is a little bit of that.
You still get a bit of that?
Yeah, you do. I mean, right. you'll come off to the bench and they'll say, look, you just got to pay a bit more respect to Scotty Thompson, for instance, or something like that. So the midfield coach will get on to the phone and say, look, make sure you...
What's the message from the runners these days? What's the theme of
get
them?
Get off. You've been on for too long. Get off now. No, they...
You're half serious?
Yeah, half serious. Yeah. Most of the time it's just, get off. So they tell you, because they've a red light shows up on the coaches and all that, and they say get off. But
it's like when your order's ready.
Like a red smorties. Light. A red light comes on when you've had 10 touches and you've kicked a goal, and red light comes. I'm a bit old-fashioned,
if you've been on for 10
I find that
10
extraordinary.
Minutes.
So not a lot of coaching done by runners,
not really. Because you've done it all during the week. You prepare that much and that thoroughly that...
Well, what the point of runners then?
Pardon?
What's the point of runners
I've always asked what the point of runners. No other sport has runners. Soccer doesn't have runners. I've often asked, what is the point of runners?
I learn something every day. We've been
or if coaches do see something tactically up there that they're doing or something, and the runner will come out and say, make sure you get this message to the players.
Right.
So he does. He is useful.
It's a great answer. A great answer.
It's a good answer.
Get off now.
There's something we've seen. Mm. I believe we're seeing a changing face in football. We saw it first in soccer, and that was there's a holding midfielder, which would be the equivalent, I guess, of a run-with player in Australian rules football. Now, up till about 5 years ago, that holding player was picked for his endurance, his ability to close-check and stop an opponent. But now the top teams around the world still have that player, but he needs to be very skillful as well. The central defenders in soccer used to just be big, immovable objects who could get a header in their own penalty area. They need to be good with their feet now as well. Now, nominally, you're an inside player. In the last 2 or 3 years, you've become incredibly fit, and your ability to run, Alan Richardson spoke about it, means that you're expected not only to get contested ball, maybe in a pack of 3 or 4 guys, but also be able to run outside and be damaging. Is that the face of the game, that this idea of inside mids and outside mids is going to be, at least for the teams that want to be top teams, replaced by, we want you to be both. You've got to be able to get contested ball, brother, and you've also got to be able to run and use it when you get it.
Yeah, definitely. And we even spoke today in our team meeting, and, half forwards are basically midfielders. They're basically getting up to the stoppage. They're either sprinting back to help, like I was saying before, help the defence, or they're sprinting forward to get front and centre to the big guys. So, yeah, and it's the role isn't defined as you're an inside mid or you're an outside player anymore. Yeah. You've got to be able to do everything.
So these new lads at St Kilda, Dan McKenzie, Jack Loney, Jack Sinclair, they seem to be being groomed for, and Jack Billings, for winning contested ball and also being able to execute if given contested ball on the outside.
Exactly right. And they're expected to be able to play on the wing, be able to play inside the centre square, and then expected to obviously finish off goals as well. So they've got a variety of roles.
So tall defenders need to be able to pick up smalls. Except there's very few excuses now made for any player, is there?
Yeah, exactly right.
We saw it with Tom Hickey on Robert Murphy. You're the man, you need to bring him down.
Exactly right.
Why do half-forwards roll up to stoppages and allow a back six to maintain their formation? Do you understand what I...
Yeah, definitely.
It annoys the hell out. Because as soon as you see them make it a six-on-six, generally that team gets themselves back in the game.
Yeah, that's right. I agree with you.
You're not going to leave Enright or Hooley or these blokes. You just can't leave them free, but they continually roll up their half forward to the stoppages, and the smarties, they're not going, are they? Because it's 1 versus 20 there.
That's exactly right.
It's an interesting one.
It is an interesting one because at the same time, the structure around a stoppage involves forwards coming up to pick up the defensive wingers of the opposition. The inside... mids want to handball out the back and then come through the corridor.
Correct.
That's obviously the easiest way to
The half forward's got to come
score.
Up and pick up that sweeping
winger.
Exactly right.
So the half forwards come up and then all of a sudden, mids are good enough these days to just see that and handball it to a Murphy or a Basher Hooley or the dangerous mid. So, yeah, I can see where you come from, Shorey, but it's the way, we plan for it all week and it's just who
not just you,
executes
everyone,
it the best. Yeah, exactly right.
So I was just thinking, again, in St Kilda terms, I would have thought right up till his delisting last year, Clinton Jones was one of the fastest, fittest and bravest and strongest footballers in the competition. But in the end, his kicking counted against him in a game that has changed face, because a few years ago his speed and tenacity and ability to win the ball was enough certainly to be in a St Kilda team that played in grand finals. It's now hard, isn't it? If you're not an elite user of the ball, the spotlight comes on to you. I imagine in team meetings that's pointed out, if not by the person then for the team, as bad ball usage. Guys, that's not what we're about.
Yeah, definitely. And Clint, he's back at Sandy and playing really good footy, and he's getting a tag every week there, which is quite funny. But, like you said before about, taggers or blokes that try and shut down, the opposition's best player, for say, is changed as well. I mean, a lot of teams aren't going with taggers anymore. And ourselves, Mav is, one of our lockdown players, but we also expect him to not just stay on his bloke, but like I said with the team defence, if he's sitting on Joe Watson and, Melksham's out, he has to go to Melksham and expect his teammate that someone's got to get to Job. So it's very technical, but we expect, maybe that's a way footy is changing, that, the tagger may, I don't know, I'm just guessing here, but maybe the tagger may eventually fade out.
You might only see him in the museum. And isn't it funny that the team that had the most famous tagger was forced to do without him? And I think they're 6-0.
They're going all right. Yeah.
I think they're going okay, that team. So you might have to go to the museum and have a look at a glass case with a...
Ryan Crowley in it.
No, maybe Shane Hurd.
Played with Shane Hurd.
Good bloke, good footballer. David Armitage,
well
thank
done,
you so much for coming in. The whiteboard again.
So every three weeks, Mark, let's get this right. We rotate him through?
Not quite that often. Just every time that St Kilda needs a win and we need Armo to play best on ground, we book him in the week before and the magic dust hits. That's the plan.
Perfect. Thanks for having me,
Armo.
No worries, Mark.
Love your work, brother.
Thank you.